And now, welcome to WCHL's Who's Talking with D.G. Martin. Tonight, D.G.'s substitute host is local author Alton Balance. And now here's Alton Balance with Who's Talking on WCHL.
Okay, welcome to Who's Talking. I am Alton Balance, substituting for D.G. Martin. And my guest is Mike Troy, who is Poet Laureate of Hillsboro. And welcome, Mike Troy.
Thank you so much, Alton. It's great to be here.
Thank you, and thank you for being here. Mike, you're the Poet Laureate of Hillsboro. What does that mean? How did you get to be the Poet Laureate of Hillsboro? You live in Hillsboro right now, and we're going to talk more about, you know, your history, but what does the Poet Laureate of Hillsboro do?
Well, I write poems for the people of the town. They come to the coffee shop and they want a poem for this or that, and so I'll bring them back one, and so they got excited about having somebody that could do that in their town. So they created the position of Poet Laureate for me and made me the Poet Laureate, which I guess I was already being anyway. But Hillsboro's a real cooperative, friendly town, and a lot goes on at the coffee shop there, and so that's just where it all came from.
How long have you been recognized as Poet Laureate? Is that an ongoing thing? When did this start?
I think it's about 2.5 years ago the town created the position of Poet Laureate and put me in it for 1 year, but then when the year got up, they never did anything to get another one, and so I guess I'm just it. And so it was doing the things I do as a poet wherever I go and live, and so they were just perceptive enough to say, oh, we got one, let's give him a name, too.
Who chooses the Poet Laureate?
As I recall, it was by action of the town council.
And you are still the active Poet Laureate?
Well, they haven't made another one to take my place, and so until that time, I'm it. But I would still keep doing the same thing. I'd just have to call myself something different. But I write, well, poems write themselves in me.
We're going to get you to share some more of your poetry here in a little bit. But Mike Troy, you and I have known each other for some time. The first time I met you in the 80s. You were walking down my driveway, and you had on a Carolina Coffee Shop T-shirt. And I told you when I was a student here, the Carolina Coffee Shop was a great place that I loved going to. And you gave me the shirt off your back, and I'll never forget that. And that began a great friendship for us. But let's go back a little bit. We're going to come back to Hillsboro and your poetry. I want to go back to who Mike Troy is. Now, you told me that some of your ancestors, and you only recently found out some of this, were some of the founders of Trinity College, which became Duke. Who were those ancestors? Tell us briefly about them.
Well, Trinity College.
You're a Durham boy, by the way.
I'm from Durham, and Trinity College moved from Randolph County to Durham County, and it was my ancestor who was part of that moving, and his name was John Balfour Troy, and he was a descendant of Isabella Balfour, a young woman who was a heroine of the Revolution, in that her father got murdered by David Fanning and Fanning's raiders, and she was supposedly cradling his head on her lap. She was 8 years old when he died, and so that's where I come from in Randolph County, was all part of that. And so the Balfours, they were the good blood, I guess, in my family line, and Andrew Balfour, there's a marker for his grave in Randolph County. But my people, my mother and father were both born in Durham, and that's where I was born, and I never knew anything about any of my family history in Duke and Trinity until I started doing research on it, and it just popped out.
Now, your parents lived in Durham. What did your dad do when you were growing up?
My father was in the independent leaf business. He was involved with a company that bought and sold tobacco on the warehouse floor that had already been cured. And mm-hmm. so he ran this independent company that was basically located down on the border belt in Fairmont and Lumberton and places like mm-hmm. that. And so he lived in Durham when the tobacco season was not on. He came and went in other times. And I actually spent part of my boyhood in Fairmont as a young kid in that world. When I was a little boy, my brother and sister and I, when we'd go to the back of where us, we'd get a tobacco jack in a little four-wheel carts and sit mm-hmm. on it and ride them down the ramps and scoot all around. My parents were both originally from Durham.
And you did your schooling there, your elementary and high school years. Where did you go to elementary school?
I spent a lot of time with Debbie Hill, and she is a descendant of George Watts Hill. And so I went to Watts Street School, and then one of the people I've done historical performance in commenting on is Julian Shakespeare Carr. And then I went to Carr Junior High School right next door, and then I graduated from Durham High School in 1956. But you know, nobody in Durham really cared much about history, and so I didn't know that I was part of it.
How about that? Yeah. Now, so you graduated from high school, and then you went to Duke,
I went to Duke so that I could live at home and have more money for buying beer and cheeseburgers. And okay. So I lived 1 year on campus and didn't care for it. I really spent more time socializing in Chapel Hill than I did at Duke and Durham because I'm a shagger. I'm a dancer. So I could dance. The girls did my step in Chapel Hill, and I couldn't do the Lindy.
Well, that's a very interesting connection, and that's going to be a part of what we're going to be talking about even more, this whole Durham, Duke, Chapel Hill, Carolina connection. What was Duke like in the late 50s and early 60s? What feel did it have compared to even today, I guess?
You know, I thought about that while you and I were riding over here. It's such a difference, the wall in Duke, the wall around East Campus, Women's Campus, you know, really separates Duke from the campus, but the wall on Franklin Street joins the campus to the town, and so there's a whole lot more separateness in Durham. And when you know, at the end of basketball season, you tend to think about Krzyzewski's nose when he kind of does that little sneer thing with his nose, and everybody from Carolina goes nuts. And yet, what a great basketball coach he is, and yet he's got that little New Jersey sneer under his nose. And so people in Durham kind of felt like Duke kids had a little bit of that sneer on their noses. So, you know, that's one of the great things about reading Will Blythe's basketball book, To Hate Like This, is to be happy
exactly.
forever.
and so you graduated in 1960. What was your major?
Well, I graduated in 1960, but I was already a year through law school, so I accelerated and took my fourth year's undergraduate as my first year of law school so that I could, you know, get out of law school and go be a lawyer, hurrah. I was in the class of 1960 undergraduate and then the class of 1962 in Duke Law School.
Now, in those Duke years, did any memorable faculty member, professor, or anybody else come to mind that influenced you in your life at that point?
Yeah, I was a great admirer of Paul Arden, and the in the English department, I had a professor named Bill Blackburn, who was a great mentor to a lot of writers, and he was kind to me and encouraged me. And so I lived right off of East Campus in Duke. I lived right south of Northgate Shopping Center.
Okay, it's time for a short break. This is Alton Balance substituting for D.G. Martin, and my guest is Mike Troy. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on WCHL with D.G. Martin and special guest host Alton Balance. And now, once again, with Who's Talking, here is Alton Balance.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. I'm Alton Balance, substituting for D.G. Martin, and my guest is Mike Troy, who is Poet Laureate of Hillsboro. Mike, we were talking about your years at Duke. You became a lawyer. Tell me about your early years as a lawyer and the kind of law that you practice, I assume, in Durham.
Yeah, I was from Durham, and I knew people in Durham. I knew everybody there. And so that's the kind of law that I practiced, was knowing people kind of law, and not, I didn't do corporate law and business law. And the practice of law is kind of a harrowing life, and it was, that was tough enough for me.
Now, in your years as a lawyer, tell us the story about He's Not Here. And how that came to be. You've been associated with that bar for many years, and this property came up for sale several decades ago. And how those of you who were lawyers would go after work, and this subject came up. Tell us that story about the history of He's Not Here.
Well, I actually had the name in my head before I had the bar. I saw this cartoon in a magazine, and this bartender is in this horseshoe-shaped bar, kind of swanky looking, and all the men at the bar are sitting, and they're looking with fear on their faces, and the bartender has the phone in his hand, and the head bartender's telling the assistant bartender answering the phone, "No, he's not here. If I've told you once, I've told you a million times, there's nobody here." And so I had that in my head. And so when I moved to Chapel Hill, and this other friend of mine who happened to be a lawyer and who's not around anymore, he asked me that I want to be partners in a beer bar. And I said I would if he let me name it. And he said, "What?" And I said, "He's not here." And then I designed the bumper sticker for it, and so. But I've never been very much the hands-on person with the bar, because alcohol isn't something that I deal gladly or well with, and so I take antabuse and I go to my bar, but I don't drink any more beer.
So what year did y'all come into ownership of He's Not Here?
Well, it's. I guess that was 1987. And I come and go there, and I like to go there and talk to people. But drinking beer or something, I put aside and gave up when I found out.
No, it's a quite a different place, but a memorable place for now increasingly generations of students. What's special about the place? What draws people there? And it doesn't seem like you've changed it a whole lot.
Well, it's 30 steps off Franklin Street down a walkway in a landlocked parking lot with a wall around it, so it gives you a real extraordinary location, and that's what's made it so popular to the Carolina kids is it's its access, and the fact that pretty girls like to go there, because that's what happens the bar business, you got to have pretty girls. If you don't have any cheese, you can't get no mouses.
And that's still, you're still somewhat involved in that, even though you have managers and stuff.
I have a partner that runs it, and I don't run it. And it's a real hard life, and it's something that I would never be able to do. But my partner, David Kitzmiller, he deals with that, and he's industrious and brilliant. But I can go there and talk to girls and boys, but I can't stay there till.
Now you mentioned you moved to Chapel Hill. And let's go back to, you know, a Durham boy, and you would come over here to Chapel Hill to go shagging with some of the Carolina folks, let's say. Why did you decide to move to Chapel Hill? What drew you here?
My first wife was an education teacher, a math education teacher at Duke, and so she was the one who did the qualification for the federal money that was in Sewell School. And so she was doing that back in the 70s. And so it turned out it would be helpful to her if she could live over here. And so I could go back and forth to my law office in Durham. And I said, well, we'll do it because our kids really want to go to the Chapel Hill schools. And so we came over here. And then when I got here, that's when I happened to find that this bar was, with this great location, was available and for lease. I've never owned the real estate and don't want to. And so another lawyer and I started it, and then we got another partner who's a school teacher, and he's very industrious, and he can run it and do things I cannot. I just named it and got it going. But
now, let's talk about your bridge in these worlds of Duke, Durham, Chapel Hill, Carolina. You must have addressed that in some of your poems. Do you have one that you can share with us that sort of speaks to those worlds?
Well, this is a poem I wrote from the Durham perspective. It's a Durham person, and everybody from Durham used to come over to Chapel Hill, and they would say, what does anybody do there? You know, because everybody's walking around with notebooks and bandanas around their heads. And so I wrote this poem. It said, Chapel Hill is an illusion. It's all done with mirrors. People perspire there, but they never sweat. Focus is constantly fixed on appearance. Whatever you see there is just what you'll get. People talk about doing for doing is fun. Still, year follows year, and little gets done. Everyone is a professional. No one has a job. A great host of Roberts, but never one Bob. Retiree or student, his dog is his best friend. Spend 1 hour with Robert, and you will understand. Chapel Hill still tastes good, but the soup is getting thinner. A great place for brunch, but a poor choice for dinner. It's the consummate consomme broth, not a stew. And I still ask myself, what does anyone do? And so that's how Chapel Hill people look to Durham people, and I guess I came to be one of them myself.
That's wonderful, Mike. And I know that you've thought about those connections, and it is an interesting world that you bridge. And now, where does that put you in those years when it comes to some of these intense basketball competitions? Who do you really pull for?
Well, I'm a fan of both of them. I love the way that Krzyzewski coaches basketball. But I love Roy, and I love Carolina better. So I generally just cheer that they play good when they play each other. And I would have loved to have seen Carolina go the whole way this year. But I'm a basketball fan. And Krzyzewski is to be greatly regarded because he's the person who, following Bobby Knight's approach, emphasizes defense and coaches and actually recruits for defense, and that's how the game has gotten the way it is. But I generally cheer for the team that has the ball, I guess.
Okay. All right, it's time for a short break. This is Alton Balance substituting for D.G. Martin, and my guest is Mike Troy. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on WCHL with D.G. Martin and special guest host Alton Balance. And now, once again, with Who's Talking, here is Alton Balance.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. I'm Alton Balance, substituting for D.G. Martin, and my guest is Mike Troy, who was Poet Laureate of Hillsborough. Mike, let's talk about your poetry. When did you start writing poetry? How did you get interested in that?
Well, as an English major, I always was attentive to poetry, and then my present wife, Laura, and I, we met in 1987, and then we courted and got married. And when I started sleeping with her, poems just started popping out of me in the nighttime, and I had to put a notebook by the bed so that I could write them down. But the people who write song-like poems are songwriters, and so I'm truly a songwriter, and that's the kind of poem that comes out of me.
Give us an example of what you're talking about, this feel of poetry. Read us a poem.
Okay, they wake you up in the night. This poem is called Magic. Magic is quiet, it's never loud. Hear a sunrise, nudge a cloud. Listen to trees as they talk to birds. Hear the bird song, still no words. All animals can smell the spring, a summer dawn, a wintry night, the whiny apple tang of fall, life's inner migratory flight. Only a bear can smell the moon, the way a bee can tell it's noon, the way a young child knows it's June, the way these words have become my tune. My stories are things I have taught myself, but my poems are teaching me. My stories are part of the land and the sky, but my poems have always come out of the sea. So it's like body surfing.
Exactly. Thank you so much. Now, at some point you decided to migrate again from Durham to Chapel Hill and then to Hillsborough. Why did you move to Hillsborough?
My wife, Laura, had always wanted to live there, and so when we got enough for Chapel Hill, we went up there. I guess that's 8 years ago, and my wife suffers from chronic fatigue syndrome. She's in constant pain, and it's a lot more restful place with her, and she has a magic cat named Horace Williams who looks after her up there. And of course, Horace was the founder of the philosophy department at UNC and the greatest teacher that's ever been at UNC. And so her cat is the greatest cat that's ever been. But we moved up there to get away from stress and hoorah.
Before we talk more about Hillsborough and your love of the place and the character of the place, let's talk about Horace Williams. I know that's been a passion of yours. You have tried to tell this story. A few years ago, you really got hooked on the story of Horace Williams. Tell us, kind of remind us who he was and how influential he was here in this town, here in Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
And then why you do what you do and why this is such a great story.
Well, you know, in Thomas Wolfe's Look Homeward, Angel, the philosophy professor in there of Eugene Gant is really Horace Williams talking to Thomas Wolfe. And Horace Williams was the most influential teacher, I think, that ever taught at UNC, and his students had this relationship with the things that he taught because he taught people, and it was mostly males because there weren't many females in school back in the late 19th century and early 20th century when he was teaching. And he taught young men how to always keep paying attention to things, because things have a way of changing once you think you got them nailed down in your mind. And so they kept them with them in their head throughout their lives. And so that's what Thomas Wolfe is talking about in Look Home What Angel. And he tells the professor, you know, farewell, I'll never forget you, and all this in this very visualizable scene. But Horace Williams just taught us what we all need to know, and that things are always in motion, and we have to treat them that way and keep our eyes and ears open and stay on our toes.
And you have, you a few years ago did a Horace Williams performance. What was that like? How did you do that? Why did you do it?
I just did it because I was so fascinated with all this history that I was learning. And at that time, I was appearing on the bill of fare at the Carolina Inn on the 12 Days of Christmas. And so I crafted that to give there. And then I've become comfortable talking about Horace Williams. And, of course, the Horace Williams house here was his home, and it's still one of the magic places in Chapel Hill in this part of the world. And he was a weird guy, but a tremendous teacher that he got close to the people that he taught, and they got him in their head, and he never left.
Now, there's a book that you refer to, and who wrote this book? Is it Winston?
Oh, Robert Watson Winston wrote The Gadfly of Chapel Hill it's the biography of Horace Williams, and so Socrates was called the gadfly of Athens, I guess, and so Horace Williams was a gadfly, so he stung the boys and stimulated them to think for themselves. And it wasn't something in a book that you left in the book. You put it in your head, and you took it with you for your whole life. And that's the way they called themselves Horace's boys. And if you go to the Horace Williams house, you can still feel it in the house, in the grounds there.
Okay, it's time for a short break. This is Alton Balance substituting for D.G. Martin, and my guest is Mike Troy. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on WCHL with D.G. Martin and special guest host Alton Balance. And now, once again, with Who's Talking, here is Alton Balance.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. I'm Alton Balance, substituting for D.G. Martin, and my guest is Mike Troy, who is Poet Laureate of Hillsborough. Mike, let's hear some more of your poetry, especially you must have one that sort of captures the spirit of Hillsborough and what drew you there and why it's special to so many that live there.
People that live in Hillsborough really live in a harmony with one another better than most people do in most towns otherwise, and so that's what everybody is captivated by. And so this is a poem that I wrote when Laura and I went to Australia and really lived for a while and then went back, and it's called Boomerang. And it says, I never understood mojo before until the tribe turned its back on me. I felt the wind blowing through my body, and even the sun could not make me warm. Then for a while I married the wind. Her constant fickleness seemed to suit me. She did not care that I had no house, and she let me lean on her as we walked. So I went walkabout with the wind. I stared at the sky till my eyes turned blue. I lived in myself, for I had no tribe, and slowly I learned to speak kangaroo. Then I turned home, and the tribe welcomed me. They saw that the sky had made me strong. Their bodies would weave as they stood and listened, for in kangaroo, every word is a song. Now every day as the sun lifts its head, the tribe comes together to chant and to dance. And slowly they're all learning kangaroo. You can learn too if you'll take a chance. And Hillsborough is such a open community where there's a lot of people who live through their powers of creation, both as writers and painters and all sorts of things. And that's how it feels to me to be among people like that. And they recognize me as a poet, even though my poems happen to rhyme and have meter. And in Chapel Hill, most people's poems don't rhyme or have meter. I'm a songwriter type poem. And Hillsborough is a very song-like place.
When, in your understanding of Hillsborough, might there have been a shift toward more people of the arts moving and living there and contributing to what it is today? Was there a recognizable time?
But it's been that way since I've gotten there. But I did used to come and go in Hillsborough, and it was a much more basic place. Since we've got the coffee shop, Cup of Joe's there is a gathering place. I think that's become the great magnet for people who not only are creative, but who want to be around people who make some mark in life as being creative. So it's not where you make your money, but where you go to make your songs. And so I guess Hillsborough's been that way for 20 years.
What else is it about the town? I mean, these great folks that have moved there and bring their talents and their art. What else do you think draws people to that town? What drew you there?
Well, there's a little bitty river and a little bitty mountain, you might know. There's Eno Mountain and the river there. And so I think everything really comes from energy in human life. And I think a lot of the energy, the physical energy that's just as real as electricity and the law of gravity, comes out of the river and off of that little bitty mountain. And so that's how it seems to me after living there. I didn't feel that way before I went there and got influenced by it, but now I think so.
Well, and it has a great sense of history, the architecture and the events that happen there, that's part of it, and its proximity to Durham and Chapel Hill. Where do you see a place like Hillsborough developing? It looks like they've had some changes going on with some of the new buildings there. Is this a place that's going to grow and sort of challenge some of the folks that move there for different reasons?
I don't know that. I just know that people who come there are thoughtful and cooperative, and they live in harmony with one another, where our country and our world is taking itself. I'm not certain. I know, but Hillsborough's always going to be more friendly and cooperative and filled with harmony than other places.
It's interesting to think why, let's say someone who's moving to this area and they have a choice of living in Durham or living in Chapel Hill, or living in Carrboro, living in Hillsborough. These are all different choices, as many towns would be. And I think you've answered, you know, what draws people to Hillsborough. Have you got some more poetry from Hillsborough that sort of captures?
I got a book of poems here called Choices, the way back, that I brought with me. Let's see what I got in here that might be appropriate to the moment if I can get the pages apart. The last poem in this book is called Gingerbread. And it says, you feel as though you can't go back, although you wish you could. But even though the crumbs are gone, the path runs through the wood. The boy and girl who walk the path still have the memory. And even though they're small, taller now, if they will bend, they'll see. And every miracle they saw, each creature and each tree, will be the selfsame miracle if they will bend and see. The witch's house looked wonderful with all its gingerbread, but one weekend of cakes enough, they're homesick for their bed. For children's sleep is peaceful sleep. The bed absorbs the dream. The bed does not forget the child. The boat recalls the stream. So walk away from gingerbread. There are berries everywhere. Then bend your knees to fit your bed. Your peaceful dreams are there. And so I believe that even though the inner child has become such a figure of speech and of literature that it's become sometimes ludicrous and ridiculous, it's still a truthful thing that is this person inside of all of us that's always been there. And where people recognize that not only in themselves but in other people, that's where is a good place to be. The children in Hillsboro know me as the poet, and they come in the coffee shop, and sometimes I write poems for them. But it's the river and the mountain and the magic in the air.
We talked about Horace Williams, and we talked about a little bit about Hillsboro and the great sense of history there. There's got to be, as you walk around that place and as you consider a life spent in this bridge between Durham, Chapel Hill, and Hillsboro, there's so many untold or just lying dormant, ready to be reawakened, like the Horace Williams story perhaps. If you had all the time in the world and let's say to tell, to explore a time in history or maybe it's some of your ancestors, what comes to mind? What would you really like to get out there and just flesh out to the world?
That if everybody would have a coffee shop that they could go to in the morning and share the life of their town and their village with one another, it changes the nature of the place where you are. And people live in community with one another there. You know, the hardware store there is a special magical place, that dual supply, and it's right across from the coffee shop. And so people wake up and look forward to getting downtown to visit one another. There's, you know, young people get go cups and older people get stay cups. And there's a lot of stay cup people that come to drink coffee in the middle of our town. And I'm one of them, and I'm part of what goes on there. So that's where Katie the clocker, that's where she works. I was talking to you about.
Well, and you bring up a good point about conversation and reconnecting to each other as humans. In this fast-paced world, you know, when we're driving between Durham and Chapel Hill and Hillsboro, the interstates, the traffic, it's important to keep that in mind. And you have reminded me of that in all of my rush from Ocracoke to Chapel Hill to Cullowhee and all across the state. Has that never been more important in terms of taking time to be a stay cup and listen to each other? Talk about that here in our closing minutes or two.
I got a poem if you'd like to be answered by a poem.
Well, let's.
You just want to talk?
No. Let's have the poem and then a few final words.
It's called Overhead, and it has the word business in quotations. It says, business is such an interesting word. We hear it so often, it never gets heard. Hear it now. Now when I no longer long for belongings, now when I hear what my life's inner song is, I am glad. The business of life isn't busyness, and being business a shroud. A cloud is a beautiful place to see, but you can't see it inside the cloud. The only business of life is joy, but joy isn't busy, it's calm. And once you discover how good calm feels, you can board up your shop with no qualms. Now I feel just the ground and the grass underfoot, and my overhead is the sky. I wander and frolic and go where I wish. I sell joy everyone wants to buy. Hillsboro is more like that, and it helps people to become more like that and take that spirit of life back with them to where they come from, and say, hey, I was in this town and I walked in this coffee shop and guess what I found out and guess what kind of people I met. And so it's a place of hope for the human race, as the human race keeps racing.
It does indeed. Our time is up. Thanks to Mike Troy for joining us, and thanks to you for listening. I am Alton Balance, substituting for D.G. Martin. Thanks for listening to Who's Talking on 1360 WCHL, your news, talk, and Tar Heel Station.